This is the first in a series of talks that I plan. May come out to be around 20 talks on guru issues. It's a huge topic. And from the outset, we are beset with the understanding that we won't be able to understand everything about it. Srila Jiva Goswami states that topics concerning Lord Shiva and Guru are both these tattvas, or these realities, are inconceivable in as much as they are simultaneously one with God and different from Him. It's inconceivable. There are many, 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 many topics could be spoken about this, but I'm going to concentrate on issues that affect devotees today and will continue to do so into the future. So in all these talks, if they go on, because everything's in the hands of Krishna. We can't say, I will do this tomorrow. We'll say, I will do tomorrow if Krishna wishes. So in the series of talks, there may be some overlapping of topics. And it's quite likely that at least as many questions will be raised as answers will be given. So why am I talking about this at all? Well, one major reason is that for some reason or other, I often get queries by email, such as the following, which I just got less than a week ago, from someone. I often get from devotees who I don't know who they are, where they are, and they just say, this is my situation, and what do you think? As in the following short mail. He writes, I am a former disciple of the former so-and-so Swami, who is a prominent guru in ISKCON in Europe, and later fell down. So he said, I am so-and-so Swami's former disciple. I was listening to your speech about Vaishnava Aparad, and one question is bothering me. Is thinking of so-and-so Swami with anger and feeling anger towards him because he left us, his disciples, is it Vaishnava Aparad? I'll just deal with this briefly, as I brought it up as an example of the kind of questions that I often get. I'll just deal with it briefly. According to Suchi Kartaha Nyai. Suchi means a needle, and Kartaha means a karai, or a wok, a big cooking vessel. So a blacksmith may be approached, in this example, a blacksmith may be approached at the same time by someone who wants a needle made and someone who wants a big cooking pot made. So he makes the needle first with the idea something, it's relatively small, we can do it quickly and is dealt with, and then you go on to the next thing. So I'll just deal with this question briefly, even though I'm supposed to be introducing the topics. I'll go right to a real life situation in which a devotee is, that Swami left a long time ago, but he's this former disciple of his has remained in Krishna consciousness better than his initiating guru did. So it's natural that you feel extremely distraught because so-and-so Swami was advertised as being so great. And actually, he did really amazing things in Krishna's service, in Prabhupada's service. But then he fell down very badly. Not that there's such a thing as a good fall, but some are more ignominious than others. So it's natural that you feel cheated. You put all your faith and your hopes in someone, and they act in a manner that appears to be someone who can't control their senses. Now, anger toward a non-Vaishnava cannot be Vaishnava Parad, and now he is not acting as a Vaishnava, but previously he did tremendous service. And for all the offenses he made, it would seem characteristic that Srila Prabhupada would not forget the great service that he did. So we can think, is it Vaishnava Aparad to feel anger with him? But just think, how do you think Srila Prabhupada sees him? Sees him as a son who has gone astray. So it may be natural to feel anger in such circumstances, but it doesn't help. And this is another point, whether it's Aparad or not. It doesn't help you in any way whatsoever, feeling anger. So better just, get over it. This has happened. It's my great misfortune. The Vaishnava outlook is that if I'm suffering or I have to go through some some unwanted situation, I'm also the cause of that. I can't simply blame it on others. We live in what's called a blame culture. We want to blame everyone else. But the Vaishnava or Vedanta outlook is that Purusha Sukha Dukhanam Bhuktritve Hetu Ruchate, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, we ourselves, due to our activities, are the cause of our own suffering and distress. So better get over it and move on. Before I get into the essence of the talk, this is just some introduction I'm giving now about why I'm even giving this at all. Why should we even discuss these things? Well, the funny thing is that devotees do discuss these things a lot, but privately, hush hush, and we can discuss them openly also. Here's I'm going to read it from another letter now that I got just recently, and just a few days ago also. And I could say it's the kind of letter I often get, but it's not, in as much as it's a unique situation. But you get the idea of the kind of tangled situations devotees get into. This devotee had written to me saying that he can't relate very well to his Diksha Guru. He didn't get into details, but I have heard that this Guru is very enthusiastic in dealing with his female disciples especially, and is somehow some attractiveness to women, and that he has a reputation of being very eager to make more and more disciples. But once someone's a disciple, once he's initiated them, he loses interest in them, and unless they bring more disciples to him. So that's what I've heard. There may be some truth to it. It wouldn't be surprising if it was, because Maya is very strong. So anyway, this devotee wrote to me, said, can I accept you as a Shiksha Guru? And I replied to him, it is fine by me if you wish to consider me as a Shiksha Guru. Best if you confirm this with your Diksha Guru, but I doubt that he will have a problem with that. So then the next letter I get from this devotee, dear Bhaktivikas Swami Maharaj, may I accept my respectful obeisances, all the glory of Srila Prabhupada, it's translated, it's obviously not very good in English, all glory to you and your service to his mission. About 5 months ago, he said, I wrote to you and described to you my situation regarding the fact that we received initiation from so-and-so Swami, and that over time I found I was more comfortable and more with your attitude and your mood and your attitude to the position of a spiritual master. And somehow I couldn't develop full trust in my initiating spiritual master. With his permission and blessing, after revealing my mind to him on this subject, I can accept your guidance and instructions more in my life, and that's also because I happen to relate. It's from a devotee in Europe. Relate with disciples of mine. He's already with them, and I'm pretty sure that disciples of mine don't preach to others that our guru is good, your guru isn't good. I've never heard of them doing that, and I hope they don't, and it's not approved, and we don't think like that either. So, then the, referring to the, getting back to the letter that this distressed or somewhat confused devotee is writing to me, that he's writing about his marriage to one of my young lady disciples. So I wrote that, I was asked, do I approve? I said, yeah, sure, go ahead. But he wrote, when we were very immature and we quickly got married after we'd just known each other for about a month, we did a karmi wedding. I guess that's a civil wedding. We do not have a children or a house or a Vedic wedding, but we live together as a couple. We didn't have it easy together, and she divorced me. I didn't want to get divorced, and I tried to save it until the last moment, but she didn't want me from the beginning. I wonder why she got married to him then. Was she pushed into it? I don't know. I really don't know. She didn't want me. But she still... Oh, maybe it was from the beginning of the marriage. Anyway, from what I understood, they were enthusiastic to get married, but shortly after marriage, she thought, wait a minute, I made a mistake. She said she would try. And he says, I don't want to make excuses for the divorce. I know that myself, I was not a completely exemplary husband, and I did not always act correctly as would be expected of me, but I wanted to work on it and try and correct my mistakes, but she was no longer interested in it, so she divorced me. I know this didn't please you, and I'm sorry and regret that it turned out that way. I did not want to act against your will, because I know you would not agree. What can I do in this situation? How can I please and follow you after this incident? I wanted to tell you, even if it's not what would make you happy, but I think it's right for you to know about it. I don't know if she wrote to you. No. I didn't. This first I knew about this divorce. I wanted to ask you what to do in such a situation about my original initiating spiritual master. What does this mean for me in practice? Because we serve and offer our service to Krishna through the spiritual master. Now in my consciousness, I want to do it through you. Should I do it through him or through you, offering our service to Krishna? What is right? It's hard for me to do it through him when I don't have full faith and trust there. I'm sorry to burden you with these matters, but I wanted to write and ask a candidate for being a servant of the servant, and then his name. So you can just get an idea of the complex issues, the complex lives, someone trying to surrender to Krishna, unable to find compatibility either with his guru or with the lady devotee he married. We don't know in such cases what's going on exactly, and that is a problem with being a distant guru, and that these are the kind of things we have to discuss in the course of all this. But for that matter, I've seen, even if I'm staying in a place and I'm right there and trying to counsel the devotees, very often the mind is very strong, and even the guru recommends this and that, and they don't follow, and they just make their own path to destruction. So I'm just giving this as an example of the kind of issues that arise in people's mind. How much someone is justified for accepting initiation from someone and then finding you can't relate to it so well. These are the kind of things which are hard to legislate. Each situation is unique. In the Western world especially, I know there's a lot of propaganda about India being this and that, but actually it's in the Western world a lot of confusion, a lot of mental illness, a lot of drug abuse, which naturally, when people come to Krishna consciousness after messing up their brains and their lives with drugs for quite a few years, when the brain is still forming, then they have a lot of problems, which is maybe one reason why they come to Krishna consciousness, and sorting it all out is not easy at all. So I just wanted to give that as an example of the kind of letters that I get and the kind of issues we have to deal with, and it's on a background of so many things, of distrust of gurus, and then there's the whole Ritvik question and so many things. There's just one example of quite a few I get of disciples who are not aligned with their guru's understanding and approach to Krishna consciousness, which puts them in an awkward position. I've had disciples who are also not aligned with my understanding, or they feel attracted more to someone else after taking. So my policy now is that you go where your faith takes you. You try to understand, but I can't force you to have faith in me. So if someone wants permission, I want to take initiation from someone else, and you do whatever you think's best for your Krishna consciousness. If you can't accept me as your guide in this matter, you do what you think best. If you think someone can guide you better, I wish you all the very best. So anyway, another reason I'm giving this series of talks is also to, as in everything we do in Krishna consciousness, especially when I'm talking and writing, I'm also working on my own understanding. Everything is in Srila Prabhupada's books that we need to become fully Krishna conscious, but our understanding and appreciation and realization of it, that should deepen. It's not that I read it, I can repeat it verbatim, and it doesn't mean we've understood anything. You could probably train a parrot to say lines from Srila Prabhupada's books verbatim, but it doesn't mean they understand anything. So I'm working on my understanding. There's a lot in Srila Prabhupada's books on the subject of guru. In fact, one inimical scholar, or at least somewhat inimical, who was an initiated devotee in ISKCON, pointed out that in Srila Prabhupada's purports, there are certain things he emphasizes which much more than any other previous commentator on the Gita and Bhagavatam, and those three points are the socially inferior position of women, the entanglement that accrues from sexual attraction. Actually, there's lots in the Bhagavatam itself and in the commentators' statements on this. And the third point was, the paramount position of the guru. So Srila Prabhupada did speak a lot about the role of the guru. And there's a lot in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, throughout the Bhagavatam, in various places, I'm speaking about in the verses, and then Srila Prabhupada's purports also. So there is a lot, so we can glean a lot from Srila Prabhupada's books, and many devotees have spoken on this. I've also spoken on the Guru Tattva, especially in initiation lectures, mostly talking about the duties of disciples. I have an app, which you can get that app, and then you can look up Guru, Disciple, and there's many lectures on these topics. And I've actually compiled hundreds of pages of notes for a planned book on guru-disciple relationships based on various scriptural statements, based on various observations of my own and of others. I don't know if I'll ever compile that book because I've got hundreds of pages of notes on several subjects, and it takes years, once you have the notes, to put them all in order and make a readable book. But I'm just saying that it's something that's been on my mind for many years. That's why I have hundreds of pages of notes, and there's just observations of different things that are going on. Someone else within our movement who's written two books on this subject is Kripa Mai Prabhu, who was one of the very first devotees I ever met in England in 1975 at the time of my coming to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada and his movement and his disciples. He's written two books. I'm just started to go through one of them. I've been thinking of giving this series of talks for some time. One reason I delayed was I wanted to do some more background reading and research, and I wanted to get these books. So now I've got that. I'm just starting to read through them. But I thought I should start to give this series of talks anyway because it's been delayed and people's questions important questions for people's lives they've put to me, and I don't think I should delay giving this series of talks anymore. I've just started going through one of these books of Kripa Mai Prabhu, and it's very good. He's compiled such a book. It's clearly with a concern to help people who are coming newly in Krishna consciousness. It's for a Western audience. Explaining in very simple terms many of the concepts concerned. One thing among the many things I have to say is that many disciples are very happy in their relationship with their guru. And for them, some of these talks may not have any relevance, but then you'll meet devotees who are not so happy. You never know. You may become unhappy also. People change, their minds, and your mind might change. You don't know. But then there are many devotees also who are not very happy in their relationship with their guru. And because of this, our movement suffered so much. Devotees have gone away. So much training has been invested, devotees, and they go away. Sometimes they become enemies of the movement. Sometimes they leave Krishna consciousness movement altogether. Sometimes they go to various Gauriya Mats, which my perspective on that nowadays is I don't I'd prefer to see that. That's another big topic anyway, but I'd prefer to see the various Gorya Mats from the ISKCON point of view as the safety net. If you can't make it in ISKCON, there is a Gorya alternative. Anyway, I'm just saying there are a lot of devotees who are not very happy, and you yourself may be happy, but then you may meet devotees. You may have to take on the role of guru yourself. Child is the father of man. So these are topics to be aware of. And I'm not going to say anything new. I don't have any revelation. Have you seen that picture in the early editions of the Bhagavatam, first canto, with Vyasadeva? It's a picture to illustrate the Krishne Swadhamo Pagate Dharma Gyana Adibisaha Kalav Nashta Drishamesha Purana Kodunodita. This Bhagavatam is this Srimad Bhagavatam is just like the sun arisen to give light to people who in the age of Kali have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance given by Vyasadeva. And there's in the picture, it shows Vyasadeva standing on high with a light coming out of him. I believe this is taken from a caricature of, is it Moses speaking to the people of Israel, or God giving Moses the Ten Commandments? But it's not like there's some ray of light and I've got, this is it, folks. I've got all the solutions. Actually, the solution is that we all become pure devotees. But then that reminds us of when this is described in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, that Srila Prabhupada was very unhappy with the management of ISKCON Vrindavan just when he was trying to get it in order just after the temple opened, and there was so much mismanagement, and Srila Prabhupada going on and on about the cleanliness, the theft, the way devotees were engaged properly, and so many different things. The guest house, the standard of prasadam, there's so many things Srila Prabhupada is upset about. And then after some time, he, calling together the leaders there yet again, he said, so what is to be done? What is the solution? And one of them said, we have to become sincere, Prabhupada. As Prabhupada said, another impractical solution. From what I understand, Srila Prabhupada was looking, he didn't say that it's impractical for you to become sincere. And I strongly feel that devotees in our movement are basically sincere. I don't think there's a lot of deliberate misleading. But practically speaking, we're in a situation that we have to live with the reality that we're not on the level of Vyasadeva, Srila Prabhupada. There's no magic wand. Yes, the magic wand is that we all become pure devotees, but it is a process. Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha, from Shraddha to praying. I'm just going to bring this point, or bring out some points which they many of them will be new perspectives or freshly presented perspectives to the listeners. And it's not like the whole of the ISKCON world also is completely tuned in and listening. And there are some devotees who regularly listen to me. So if you like to listen, maybe in future more will listen also. Let us see. I'm just trying to discuss these points. I'm not the only one discussing them. Bring them out for them, especially for those who have asked questions, who are confused, or are suffering in their disciple role, for the future also. It may well be there are devotees who are confused and suffering in their guru role also, we see that some of the gurus go away and then the disciples become confused, but it means the one who's supposed to be a guru was confused. himself. And then you'll say that, well, he couldn't have actually been a real guru if he's confused. Okay, all right, accepted. But I'm just using the word guru in a conventional term, in the way we commonly use it. There will be so much, undoubtedly there'll be so much machine gun fire flack at me. But anyway, I'll go ahead with discussing it, and I pray to Hari, Guru, and all you Vaishnavas to be able to do some service in doing so. So what issues are we going to cover? There are many, many, but like I say, it's impossible to be exhaustive. We may be exhausted before we get 20 talks. I'm not going to get them one day after another, just intersperse them. There are many topics to explore, but as one of my respected godbrothers just wrote to me about this, at the root of it all is the question, or the issue, we're talking about guru issues, is that Sri Gurudev is the manifestation of Lord Krishna's mercy, his manifestation of his mercy, a devotee. Okay, that's why we call Srila Prabhupada his divine grace. He's the manifestation of Srila, of Sri Krishna's mercy. How does Sri Krishna show his mercy? In the form of the guru. Then the question then becomes, how to properly identify and embrace this flow of mercy, which is coming through a person. Some of the topics which I have prepared to be covered. The first one, when I get past the introductory section. The first one is Srila Prabhupada. The point that Srila Prabhupada expected his disciples to become gurus, distrust of gurus, topmost gurus and others. Guru means Gyanadata, one who gives knowledge. Then from Pancharatra Shastra, a list of qualifications, minimal qualifications to be an acharya. From Hari Bhakti Vilas, the Gauriya Vaishnav Smriti, the main Gauriya Vaishnav Smriti Shastra. Hari Bhakti Vilas, in the very first chapter, deals with the necessity of having a guru, guru qualifications given in some detail, so I'll be going through that, and then on the qualities expected of a disciple. And we will see from reading this that we may think that the gurus aren't up to the standards, but the disciples aren't also. Then I'm going to take a fairly quick look at Ritvikism, which is the solution to all the problems. No more gurus. So they say. And I'm going to be discussing the final order. Rubber-stamped gurus. Woo, that's a controversial one. The dangers of guru groupism. Forced discipleship. That will be based on a letter I've received from Europe about devotees say they're being forced to take initiation from a certain guru there. So, those who are waiting for a reply, you may have to wait quite some time for me to get around to this topic. Then a guru horror story about, a devotee wrote me about the horrific way, he didn't use that, but I used that term, his guru had dealt with him. I'm going to be reading from Narahari Sarkar Thakur's Sri Krishna Bhajanamrita, which states that shortly after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, there was a lot of turmoil regarding gurus and disciples and how disciples should deal or approach gurus who don't live up to what's expected of them, discussing about shiksha gurus, the law of disciplic succession, becoming a diksha guru, how do you do it? How do you get on the corporate climbing ladder? And then the last topic, or almost last, is solving ISKCON's guru problems. And I'll give you a quick preview of that. Solving ISKCON's guru problems, Varnashram Dharma, train up from a young age. And you may think, well, if you're going to be talking about gurus, you've got to be talking about female Diksha gurus, right? You're going to be on banging the drum about that one. No, I'm not going to discuss it here. Maybe one or two lines. I already discussed it in some detail previously. So, someone wrote to me when I said that I'm planning this series of talks. Looking forward to your talks on guruship within ISKCON. I feel that improvement, or rather a new culture coming closer to Srila Prabhupada's vision is necessary. Yeah, agreed, we should come closer to Srila Prabhupada's vision, but exactly what is Srila Prabhupada's vision regarding guruship and so many other topics is contentious. It's amazing how many fault lines there are within ISKCON on so many issues which could result in an earthquake at any time. There's so many issues, and guru issues and poison issues and book changes issues. It's a volatile time. So what exactly is his view on guruship? There are different outlooks on that. We should try to understand, because our understanding of a guru, a relationship with a guru, it's of vital importance. Exactly why, I'll get round to that shortly. There are many aspects of Guru Tattva, and there'll always be varieties of understandings. It's because every guru is an individual person, every disciple is an individual person. Exactly the role that a guru takes, his role is to be to be seen as good as God, but how much godliness in terms of formal worship he wants to accept, that is up to him. Many years ago, I was visiting the ashram of one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, means direct disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He didn't have many disciples. That was Yashomati Nandan also visited him at another time, and he came and told me this, that Yashomati Nandan had noticed that that guru did in his own ashram where he lived, he didn't keep a picture of himself, he didn't have a picture of himself on the altar, which is standard practice in all Gaudiya Math branches. And Maharaj, who's Janardhan Maharaj, worshipable Janardhan Maharaj, was a very, very sweet devotee. He's passed on now. He had replied that, see, who am I to put myself in that line? I'm just a servant. So he was, everyone in the ashram, his brahmacharis, all related to him as the guru, and he took that role in relation to them, but he didn't see himself to be on that very high level. Whereas others, among his godbrothers, they did put their picture on the altar. I think he's the only one I know who didn't do that. So I'm just giving this as an example how there are varieties of understanding of one's own position in relation to the parampara. And it's not that Janardan Maharaj was right and his godbrothers were wrong, or vice versa, or that he was actually not qualified to properly represent his guru. He took disciples, which means that he took the position of being able to present and represent his guru and the parampara to others. But he, ontologically and in his heart, he didn't feel that I'm qualified for this. And actually, no guru does, but some, they emphasize that more. So I'm just making, just giving this as one example of how there'll always be different varieties of understanding. You can't exactly legislate it down to, and guru has to be like this, and he has to be like this, and disciple has to be like this. Actually, much more than saluting, disciple, tadviti pranipatena, that's the first thing mentioned, that the disciple has to bow down before the guru. So that is there. But exactly how it's applied, we should try to understand. We're talking about something, one, we can't understand it because it's all, but we should try to understand. Because there are general understandings, and we can't say that because there are widespread or widely varying nuances on what's said, but still there is such a topic as guru tattva. And in general, we are enjoined. Siddhanta balaya chitena karaha alash eha hoite krishne lagi sudhira bishash. Which Srila Prabhupada often quoted. He said, Srila Prabhupada, yeah, he quoted this, do not be lazy in the matter of understanding, the proper understanding, because by this endeavor to understand, one's mind will become firmly attached to Krishna. So, wrong understanding in spiritual life means disaster. As we saw in the Zonal Acharya era, how much the movement was put back, how many good lives of good people who took to Krishna consciousness were devastated by that due to a wrong understanding. It looked good in the beginning. It seemed like nectar in the beginning. But it turned out for many to be like poison in the end. So we don't have such a spectacular scenario as we had in the 1980s with spectacular fall downs and mass exodus of devotees. We don't have that. But still, there's often unspoken, but a widespread feeling that something is awry. Often unspoken means it seems like at the present time in ISKCON to openly say, hey, look, there's something seriously wrong here. You're not supposed to do that, which is unhealthy in and of itself. If we can't say that. But out from outside, people have no reservations. Those outside means those who were inside and have gone outside, and they don't have any reservations in pointing out there's something wrong, but they do it in such an inimical way that we don't want to hear them. And then when someone, for instance, myself in this case, tries to discuss such things, then you equate them with those who are basically just fault finders and bitter and inimical. Anyway, I'll try and address these issues, and I expect that they'll be already just it might go viral or semi-viral or something or whatever. I doubt it because I think a lot of devotees are also, they're just fed up of so many issues. They just want to chant Hare Krishna and be happy, and they don't get into these things at all. But there is a significant community of those who are really, they're really hot on guru issues, and they'll be giving comments like, you're bogus, and obviously Prabhupada is the only guru for all time, and all this kind of thing. So, all right, Hare Krishna, that's an introductory talk. And I'll continue with introductory talking, just discussing what the, just giving an overview of what the issues are in the next talk, Krishna willing. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. All glories to those who have taken shelter at His divine lotus feet. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya chunakang padayo nipatya kritvacha kakushatam etad aham bravimi. He sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat guranga chandra charne kurutanuraka parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mokarona vayang vichara yamaha hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama.